From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on June 4th, 1 week ago, when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that he would permit outdoor dining at restaurants during phase two of the reopening process. In a very short time, dozens of restaurants in the Rochester and Finger Lakes region moved tables and chairs outside to serve diners. And they were open. The announcement came from the governor with some restrictions. Tables must be spaced 6 feet apart. All staff must wear face coverings, and all customers must wear face coverings when not seated. Didn't take long for establishments in areas like Park Avenue to be bustling with activity. And with that came calls from restaurant owners, community members, and some local leaders to shut down traffic and open some streets for dining so restaurants could expand their space. A little more than an hour ago, Governor Cuomo announced that 5 regions in this state, including Rochester and the Finger Lakes, will enter phase three of reopening tomorrow, Friday. The state guidelines require restaurants to limit capacity to no more than 50% of maximum occupancy indoors. That excludes employees, so it's likely we'll see continued interest in using outdoor spaces like streets for dining. Similar conversations have been happening in New York City, where restaurateurs have pushed Mayor Bill de Blasio to open roadways for restaurant use. Cincinnati and Tampa have already implemented open street programs. So what's happening, or what could happen, here in Rochester? And if streets opened for restaurants, what would be required? How would it affect traffic and pedestrians? How could local governments ensure their decisions are inclusive of all people in all neighborhoods? Well, let's talk about it. Our guests this hour are here to explore it as we ask listeners, have you gone out to eat yet? How did you feel about it? You feel comfortable? You plan to go soon? Mary Lupien is a member of Rochester City Council. Mary, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Mitch Gruber, also a member of City Council. Mitch, welcome back to you.
Pleasure to be here.
Kelly Bush is the president of the New York State Restaurant Association's Rochester chapter and owner of Marshall Street Bar and Grill. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi.
And Roger Brown is a creative consultant for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Roger, welcome back to you as well.
Oh, thanks. Glad to participate.
Well, so let me ask the restaurateur of the group, Kelly.
Yes.
How's the first week gone?
Oh, it's going well. Me and my husband have two places, Marshall Street Bar and Grill and the Union Tavern. Marshall Street is on Monroe Avenue. We are still closed down there. We are meeting today to talk about reopening plans, but our place down in Seabreeze is open. Today is our first day of outdoor seating, so we'll see how it goes.
And, Kelly, when it comes to the actual turnout so far, what are you hearing at the Union Tavern, but also as you observe the greater community, what are you seeing in terms of interest and turnout?
I think it's 50-50. I think there are a lot of people that are super excited to get out again, and we saw that last weekend. Places were full. And then there's people that are still a little cautious, and I think now that we are in phase, or tomorrow we'll be in phase three, I think there's people that may be utilizing outdoor seating before they're feeling more comfortable going indoors.
Well, we did invite members of the mayor's administration to join us. They did not respond to our outreach. But two members of City Council are here. Let me ask them what they're seeing. Mary Lupien, 1 week down with outdoor dining. We see a lot of hustle and bustle in certain places. And I'm curious to know how you think it's going so far.
Well, I think what I've seen is that certain areas, like you're saying, are very full. Some are doing this better than others in terms of following the governor's guidelines. One of the reasons I think I got brought into this discussion is because of a Facebook post that I had made showing a picture someone had sent me of Park Ave, one of the corners, and just, you know, mobbed with people, tables sitting down, not wearing masks, people waiting the tables, not really having a lot of room to move around, and just really no room for anyone on the sidewalk to get by safely. And actually that same picture had somebody running in the street to get past. I don't think that's necessarily the most common scenario. You know, I've seen pictures since of restaurants doing it well, but I know I am very concerned about how quickly we are moving, and just making sure that if we're going to do this, that we have the space. And, you know, it's tying into, I think it's a really great moment because, you know, as a city, we've kind of declared that this is more the direction we want to go in terms of amenities for pedestrians, you know, in our 2034 plan, and we're talking about complete streets for bikes. You know, I think this is a real opportunity to capitalize on a much broader base of people who might want to do this.
Mitch Gruber, how do you see it?
Well, I had the privilege of representing City Council on the conversations about jump-starting ROC, which is what the administration is calling this plan, or the general plans of kind of reopening our economy, reopening our small businesses. And what I can say first and foremost, and I'm glad Kelly's on the phone because I spoke with Kelly quite a bit as a representative of the Restaurant Association, is that I'm frankly in awe at how quickly government was able to work, not just at the city level, but also at the state level. I mean, Governor Cuomo, who I think has been very transparent about, most stuff when it comes to reopening, kind of threw some folks for a loop, I think, when there was an announcement that outdoor dining was going to be opening up, before phase three, which is where restaurants always were. And within a few hours, we were able to immediately provide a no-fee permit. I want to repeat that, Evan, for the listeners, a no-fee permit, and in some ways even more importantly, that was provisionally accepted. So you don't have to wait 2 weeks to get a permit to be able to open. And we did this with the support of the Liquor Authority so that folks could also use sidewalks and private parking lots to be able to not just serve food but also serve, drinks, sit-down drinks, not like this is Mardi Gras. And I was really impressed with the way that worked. The problem is that not all businesses paid attention to the guidelines that were associated with it. A lot of businesses did not pay attention to making sure there was adequate distance between tables and diners, and on top of that, not having staff wear masks as needed. And those things are not going to be tolerated. Ultimately, we're all in this together, and if we don't act like that, then folks who are intentionally bucking the rules or deliberately bucking the rules aren't going to be able to continue to move down as we do open up some streets, open up some single lanes and things of that nature.
Yeah, and to Mary Lupien's point, Roger Brown, this might feel like a temporary moment, whether this pandemic lasts, whether we end up looking back and saying, oh, I remember the summer of 2020, or it goes on for a year, or we get in this groove for however long. It may feel temporary, but is this a moment to say, we're gonna deal with this now, and we're going to make changes that can last?
Well, I really think it's very much a catalytic moment. A lot has been going on for the last maybe 5 to 10 years to try to create more space for not only the pedestrian but for dining and so forth. You've probably heard of the tactical urbanism movement where places will be, parking spaces, for instance, will be taken over for on a temporary basis in a way to show that there is a great opportunity here to utilize streets and so forth for, in fact, for dining. And it's a movement that's running around the country. The Congress for New Urbanism is talking about this at great length. Our own design center is talking about this, and so I really do see it as a catalytic moment where you're going to find more streets closed and looking at examples, for instance, that are happening around the region here, like Linden Street in Geneva that closed out their alleyway and created this gorgeous place for pedestrians and diners. So, yes, it's really going to happen, I think.
So let's talk a little bit, Roger, about Vonoofs. How did I do there? Vonoofs?
Well, you're close, yes.
I don't speak Dutch.
I know. You're supposed to umlaut the O's.
Oh.
Anyway, no, that is certainly a very much a European tradition that is very slowly coming over here in this country. Vonoof is a Dutch word for living streets. And what it does. It takes a street that maybe at one time used to be for autos and so forth. It is making it solely into a transportation way for all kinds of transportation, for pedestrians, for diners, for buses, all at the same time. And what it requires, of course, is that it slows down traffic to a very small pace so that pedestrians and diners and so forth can safely and want to be part of such a space. And it almost, actually it's something that we're working on a little bit right now in a project out in Shalott. So it's Vernouf. It's certainly something that has tremendous possibilities for, for places here in Rochester, for that matter. Good example might be Gibb Street.
Yeah, which we always see that during the Jazz Fest, but
And that's every time the Jazz Fest closes down, people look at each other and say, "Gee, we ought to just close the street permanently because it was so successful."
Absolutely, sorry, Roger, go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say that discussions might go on for a month or so, and then it sort of fades, and there may be people, along that stretch that are really unsure about doing this. But I think maybe now is a really an interesting way to bring that up again.
Actually,
and,
Roger, we are the U of R, the Javas, Max and Eastman, they're actually all on board with this. Now is the time. Gibb Street is such a great example because it's already one way, it has limited parking, and it comes with a covered walkway to a parking garage nearby. So, in this year's budget, we're actually talking about redoing Gibbs and Swan, and so I think it really opens up the opportunity to think about what we, to kind of reimagine what we want it to look like.
And more importantly, the ROC 2034 plan, I can't stress enough the importance for anyone listening who's interested in these conversations to go and check out the 2034 comprehensive plan. It lists right there in the placemaking plan, which has a really beautiful interactive map that I'm looking at right now. It very intentionally states that, turning Gibb Street into a pedestrian street is certainly part of the city's plan moving forward. It's a 2034 plan. In other words, it takes us to 2034. So that doesn't mean it happens tomorrow. But I think that as we're all kind of identifying the realities of COVID, which are going to force us to be innovative and thoughtful and smart, are going to hopefully prompt some of these things to maybe happen earlier than they would otherwise. But Roger, I just want to reiterate, you may be right that the conversations about Gibb Street happen for a month here, a month there, every year. I don't know. It's never been a conversation I've been privy to, but what I can tell you is that we've never before had a comprehensive plan that also specifically and explicitly states that we ought to do these types of things for the sake of our city. And last year, I believe it was November, that City Council adopted the comprehensive plan, and now we have these goalposts to work towards that are not moving, right? It's a set goalpost, and one of the things that I'm most proud of in the way that the Jumpstarting ROC has worked is that it's really been driven by the city's planning department, which is a very, very remarkable. It's remarkable how much they are able to put out in a four-person department, including the comprehensive plan. But they're using the comp plan as the building blocks to be able to create more of a plan for opening streets, creating sidewalk dining, and things of that nature.
So let me ask Kelly a little bit about this, but let me also ask listeners. Some of you have sent emails. I'll read some of those coming up here. If you want to call the program as we talk about outdoor dining, your expectations for safety, how you feel about it, if you've had an experience already, what you're hearing from leaders in government who are on the program with us. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Kelly Bush, how does all this sound to you?
I think it sounds great. If there's a way we can do this safely, I think it's fantastic. I mean, all small businesses have been hit hard these last 3 months. Restaurants are pretty specific, though. You know, we're still paying rent. We had to throw out a lot of product. It's been really tough. And if there's a way that we can create some more revenue, I think that's wonderful. And the idea of having streets filled with diners is just, it's an amazing thing to think about. We see it happening in other countries, and there's no reason we can't try it here. So obviously from a financial state place, that it's going to be beneficial to us. But I think if anything has happened during these last 3 months, it's made us have to be really creative. So let's keep trying to be creative and keep rolling with that. I think that's a great idea.
Let me read my first email from Sharon, who says the following. Evan, public health officials keep emphasizing the need for masking and physical distancing. How does that square with so many people sitting just 2 to 3 feet apart, talking into each other's faces at cafe tables? Should Dr. Mendoza suggest that the lowest risk is to dine only with people from your own household? I've heard nothing about that. If hairdressers need to get tested every 2 weeks, what about restaurant workers or tattoo artists? How will restaurants be dealing with cleaning dirty dishes versus bringing clean plates out from the kitchen? Will separate staff members be performing these duties? And most importantly, regarding reopening, I haven't heard any updates about whether we have enough contact tracers trained yet. That comes from Sharon. So Kelly, let me hit a couple of points there, and then I'll ask the other guests here. First, she's asking with everything from, you know, the space where people are sitting, and we can't speak for Dr. Mendoza here. I think Dr. Mendoza has consistently said, follow the best advice for physical distancing, but know that we have to slowly, wisely reopen the economy. But she's also asking about how you clean dishes, for example, how you clear plates. Can you talk a little bit about that, Kelly?
Sure. I mean, a lot of people are using disposable dishes and silverware right now, if that works with what their menu is. A lot of the bigger restaurants or restaurants that are doing more fine dining have the very high heat dishwashing units that are pretty great and sanitize everything. We are having, different staff do different jobs. We're keeping, you know, front of house out of the back of the house. Everybody's wearing masks. We've got sanitizing stations around. So we are really doing our very best. And as far as the seating, if you're following, you know, the guidelines, it's 6 feet between seat to seat. So if you're in with your party, you won't be within 6 feet of the other party. Now, of course, you're going to be in close contact with your guests, and that's the risk that you take.
That's a trade-off, yeah.
Party, yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel, Kelly, about the calls for more testing? I mean, what we see now is a requirement for haircutters, for example, to get tested every 2 weeks. Could you see that happening with restaurant employees?
I think that would overwhelm the system. There are a lot of restaurant employees, so I think that's something that they are thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised it wasn't in part of the reopening guidelines, but...
Yeah, and when you say reopen could overwhelm the system, you're talking about testing capacity, getting results back. But generally speaking, if they felt like they had the capacity, is that something you'd welcome?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Mary Lupien, what would you say to someone like Sharon who's looking at all of the different aspects of dining and she's got some nerves about it, you know, about the rules, about the way it's being executed? How do you feel about that, Mary?
I mean, it does make me nervous, but we've seen throughout this that, you know, people want to get together with each other. They're going to do it. And, you know, that just from driving around and seeing backyard parties. So I understand the concern. I think certainly allowing outdoor seating increases the likelihood that that will happen. But I've just got to hope that people are taking this into consideration and, you know, really only dining with people that they live with or people that they know have a relatively low opportunity to become infected.
Let me grab Alan on the phone, calling from the epicenter of outdoor dining for the moment, and I think it's Park Avenue. Hi, Alan, go ahead.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
Good.
It's Alan Knopf from Park Avenue. Hey, we down on Park Avenue, we really think it would be great if we could open up the street on some limited basis, whether weekends and nights, and have dining in a socially distant manner. You know, I've helped over the years put together the festival, which is a great thing. Unfortunately, we can't have it this year. But I just think it would be a great thing to do. And I think in the future, even when this pandemic is by us, as the people were talking on your show, it would be great to do this on a regular basis, I think, if it works out this summer.
And Alan, can I just ask you a quick follow-up before I turn it over to the other guests here? You talked about organizing the festival, which is canceled, correct?
Right, right. Yeah, we have a organization, Park Avenue Revitalization Committee, that I helped organize about 20 years ago when the festival was going to be canceled, and we put a lot of ground rules in place.
Sure, sure.
We were working with a new promoter this year, but you know, we obviously couldn't get it together, and it would be when it's not the year, but hopefully we'll be able to do it in the future.
Okay, and I just wanted to ask you, and then maybe ask some the members of council this. And this is not a glib question. This is literally trying to learn on the fly. If there is one of the byproducts of seeing the protest movement is that we're going to get some more data about how transmission does or doesn't happen outdoors versus indoors, and especially if there is consistent masking, which I have seen in most of the protest settings here. Plus, people tend to be moving. They're not always staying in the same place. Alan, are you sure that an outdoor festival couldn't happen? Is it up to the organizers? Were you told you couldn't do it by the city?
No, I think the people organizing it just decided it was, you know, it was too iffy. It's a lot of work.
Sure.
To go for and do that. We were beginning to take in money from exhibitors from all over, and it's just a long process. And we were changing over to a new promoter, mm-hmm. so... It just was too much to go through all that and tell everybody we had to cancel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of work. Well, listen, I appreciate the phone call. Let me turn it over to the guests then. Mitch Gruber, can you hit that as well, by the way? I mean, outdoor festivals, is there any hope that we're learning enough in the last few weeks to make a call on, you know, maybe sort of, look, I know there's a lot of planning that goes in, and most have already been canceled, but is there any hope at all this year for that?
I really think that would have to be at the discretion of the organizers. You know, I work very closely with the folks who organize the Puerto Rican Festival, and to the point you just made, Evan, the amount of work that has to be done to organize musical guests coming in from Puerto Rico and to get sponsors and to do this, that, and the other thing, I think at this point there's a very low likelihood of some of these major festivals from recurring. I want to hit a couple of points, and then I also want to be fairly prescriptive for people like Alan who want to be able to move on this. So one, and I'm probably going to say some things that are going to get me in trouble with my friends in the world of active transportation. There's been a lot of calls from folks who have been pushing for open streets earlier. I would argue that unlike a lot of other places, the city of Rochester has an incredible amount of parks and an incredible amount of trails and streets that people have been able to get outside and exercise and maintain social distance fairly well. I've been doing a lot of it myself. The only place I've ever felt like I really couldn't keep good distance was up at the Cobbs Hill Reservoir. So I think, you know, there's a lot of good reason why we haven't done some of this stuff earlier, but it's important for us to do it now. And that's why in a more prescriptive way, what I would ask people to do is go to jumpstartingrock.com. And if you go there, this is a new website. The city put it out amid all the other press releases related to outdoor dining last week. There's a page there called Flower City Sidewalks. And this, at first, there's five levels of openness, right? So the first one is sidewalks. The second one is private property. Those are the ones that we addressed last week and that Kelly and I worked on closely. Level 3, 4, and 5 are things that are now available, and that includes expanding into on-street parking lanes, expanding into a travel lane, and street closures. But all of them are going to have to be done in a way that is activated by the businesses or by the business association or by the residents of a neighborhood. So if you go to this website, it will tell you all the ways that you can apply. It will also tell you all of the different streets that are eligible to do this, and there's some significant criteria. Again, I'd go back to the planning team using the criteria to make sure that they're making smart decisions across the board for our city. But, you know, the other key thing to this is that let's not forget that in the last month, we saw two major fires on Monroe Avenue. right? Really, really sad, awful stuff. I think there was one 2 days ago over at Monroe and Rosedale. And one of, you know, people oftentimes are calling me and saying, why don't we just open up this street? Well, part of the reason is because we have to make sure there's room for emergency vehicles to get through, like fire trucks. We have to make sure that if there's a water main that breaks or if there's major issues related to, you know, refuse, that there's the opportunity to be able to navigate that well. And so all this stuff takes a little bit of time, but we are now at a place where businesses, neighborhood associations can apply for closing streets, closing lanes, and the city is going to be really quick about getting back to folks and doing some of that work. So I'd encourage Alan to go to that site, to gather a whole bunch of different partners on Park Avenue who want to work together on this and put forward an application, and I'm confident the city will get back to will get back on that in very short order.
All right. Listeners, if you want to continue with the conversation with your feedback on where things stand in the city of Rochester and in the Rochester Finger Lakes region as we move through the phases of reopening, as we think about outdoor dining, as we think about government response and what the government's trying to do. You just heard the member of council, Mitch Gruber, talking about some of the plans there. But Roger Brown is a creative consultant for the Community Design Center. Anything there you want to jump on, either rebut or respond
to? Mitch is bringing up RUC 2034, the comprehensive plan for the city. And one of the things that, yes, it pointed to Gibbs Street as a potential area to close down for pedestrians, but that actually came from the citizens of this city as they provided input, you know, into the plan. And, you know, lots of people really thought that would be a great idea, and so this was a great platform for, you know, their wishes to be expressed. And I think one thing that could very much happen, and that does seem to be like a really good place to start potentially, is once something like that is created, it'll provide, you know, a model to look at for applying to other areas in the future. But as soon as you get one down there that's working, I think a lot could happen, again, slowly over time for other streets, other areas.
Absolutely.
You know, in the city.
I could not agree more. And just to your point, Roger, I would just add the entire comprehensive plan came from the community. By no means was I suggesting that the planners came up with this on their own. It was done with literally years of community engagement. And so, yes, the fact that there was a groundswell of desire for a place like Gibbs Street to close and for us to recreate what happens at Jazz Fest every year, that's exactly why it is in the comp plan. And I couldn't agree more that by trying to create some pilots during COVID right now, I think we're going to find that a lot of things ultimately stick. We'll find, you know, the crisis is an opportunity to try to find a way to do some things better. And I think that that's exactly what this administration and this council have proven the desire to want to do, which is why we've been able to get this jump-starting RUC page going so quickly, and hopefully the opportunity to close a lot of streets. I'd like to close a lot more streets than Gibbs. It just has to be some buy-in from the business owners and the residences there.
So, I do want to mention too.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we have to think about equity here. You know, Mitch mentioned, you know, we do have a lot of parks in Rochester, but we have to think about where they're located. And, you know, especially now during COVID, you know, we're not wanting people to necessarily ride the bus to go to Cobbs Hill or, you know, up to Charlotte. But, you know, where can we strategically place open streets in neighborhoods that maybe aren't so close to ability, you know, places where they can recreate and exercise? And, you know, business corridors in neighborhoods we wouldn't necessarily think. You know, we're talking about Gibbs Street and Park Ave. Those are on the east side. But where are other areas, you know, that maybe aren't as thought of in terms of, you know, business corridors, but they're there and they would absolutely benefit from this.
Yeah, so just another plug to go to jumpstartingrock.com. And, Mary, check it out. If you go to the website, you'll see the map of the entire city of Rochester, and the green zones there are zones that hit particular criteria that the planning department has set out with the intention of making sure that there are zones in each and every quadrant, and there are several of them. Certainly the Northwest is the zone with the least amount of them, and that's partially because the Northwest is also the part of our city with the most kind of with the most industrial infrastructure still. But I think you'll see that there's a whole lot of opportunity in each quadrant for folks to take advantage of this. And I really hope people at the end of this go to jumpstartingrock.com. I will commit to putting the link on my Twitter. I'm sure Evan and Megan will help us do the same through XXI.
Well, so as we go to break here, as much as the emphasis has been in the last week, as Mary said, on, you know, the Park Avenues of the world and things kind of picking up and people enjoying themselves, there is a side of this that I think maybe is, well, it's a different side. And as we go to break, let me read an email from Bob. Bob says, Park Avenue is disgusting with people. Zero social distancing, no masks. I hear a lot of talk, but I know a lot of bars are literally thumbing their nose at all of this. And the joke I say to myself is, look, everyone, COVID is over here on Park Avenue in Rochester, New York, because we're special. That's from Bob. Let me ask our guests when we come back from break what they make of that. And if there's a downside to closing streets, you know, how you kind of do this thoughtfully. Our guests are joining us discussing the reopening of restaurants, particularly outdoor seating that we've seen for the last week, kind of getting a quick look at how that's going and asking our listeners for their thoughts, too. Mary Lupien and Mitch Gruber from Rochester City Council, Kelly Bush, the president of the New York State Restaurant Association's Rochester chapter, owner of Marshall Street Bar and Grill and the Union Tavern, and Roger Brown, who's a creative consultant for the Community Design Center of Rochester. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we have the candidates for county clerk running in the primary June 23rd. You'll hear from the candidates in our first hour. In our second hour, a conversation about racism in the suburbs. From Fairport all the way out to Skinny Atlas, there have been recent incidents that have gotten attention. But is this time different? We'll talk about that, and we'll talk with you on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, Kelly Bush, as the president of the New York State Restaurant Association's Rochester chapter, Bob says his experience on Park Avenue is not good so far, that it looks like bar owners are not taking COVID seriously and that people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. What would you say to someone like that?
Well, I don't think Bob's alone. We have been hearing that, and we are trying to educate our members, and honestly, throughout this whole thing, we have let anybody, any restaurant owner who wants information or there are free webinars or our daily updates to just join, you know, that part of the association. So we've been really doing our very best to educate as soon as the guidelines came out. I mean, last week it was really just 12 hours we had to plan. But we did webinars where we went through line by line with these expectations. So we all know what they are, and I certainly hear Bob's concerns, but there are a lot of us out there that are really taking this very seriously, and not to say that those restaurants and businesses weren't, but I think we reached out to a lot of people and reminded them, you know, what the guidelines were and what we are expecting, because we all need to work together to get to the other side of this.
Sure.
It won't work if we don't.
And Councilmember Lupien made the point, you know, Mary, you said that we could all sort of hope that everyone would eliminate all risk here, but that's just not the human experience, at least not for a pandemic that could go on for months or a year or more. And so understanding that this is going to be part of life now, how do you balance that between saying, okay, it's part of life, how do we sort of harm reduction, how do we be smart, how do we wear masks, et cetera, versus these experiences that people have where they start to feel like, is anybody taking this seriously? What's the right reaction of government, and what's the right balance, Mary?
Well, just to, you know, what was said, I think that what I feel like is happening is there's a rebelliousness that comes from scarcity. You know, people have been out of work for a long time, they're finally being given the chance to earn some money again, and they don't have a lot of space, right? They're maximizing the amount of space that they have, which isn't very much. So I think, you know, allowing streets to be open will help them comply. But right now we're kind of setting them up for failure, because if you're only allowed outdoor seating and you only have so much space, you can only have so many tables. So you can't really make the money that you need to make in order to stay open. So I think this is going to be really critical to allowing our businesses to thrive, which, you know, small businesses are the backbone of our economy, and our backbone has been broken. And so we really need to do what we can. And again, you know, there's the business side, but there's also the personal side. And so, you know, we also need as people to be able to feel comfortable and safe being outside. You know, it's funny, you know, especially a couple of weeks ago when I'd see somebody out, even on the other side of the street, it's like, you know, like, oh, you're too close. You know, we're almost afraid of each other. But as this is being relaxed, we have to remember that even though we're being allowed, we're being told it's okay to come back together to a certain extent, we still have to take precautions. You know, I chuckle a little bit at the you know, Cuomo instructing us how to hug each other again. But we have to always keep it in mind. I don't know when the next time I'm shaking hands again, just saying, you know, this is going to be part of the fabric of our lives for a long time.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. And this is Andrea from Redfern Restaurant on the line next. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Evan. How's it going?
Well, okay. How's it going out there for you?
It's good. As you know, I'm a Park Ave business owner, and we've been closed since mid-March, and we're not open for takeout or for dine-in right now. But yeah, I just wanted to chime in that it has been pretty horrifying to watch some of our neighbors on the Ave. It's just like it never happens. There's no masks, even pedestrians, not just people patronizing businesses, but pedestrians. You never, never see a mask on Park Ave right now. What I wanted to say, though, is that I think it would be helpful for some business owners if they were able to dedicate one staff who is sort of acting as crowd control. Trader Joe's does this especially well. They have a person on staff who is literally just controlling inflow, making sure people are standing on the pavement markings, kind of like chit-chatting with people as they wait. That would be something that would be awesome from some of the restaurants in town, and visual cues. So, for example, like Sean Dunwoody has done a good job of making at Parcel 5 or at the City Blue where he did the murals, there's like visual cues that show where a 6-foot space is. And Bitter Honey has done this well too. They have like a garden where you can go and you kind of have your own little like picnic area that's very visually well marked. So I just thought that could be some good things we could do to help minimize the spread.
Andrea, thank you. Let me kick that over to Kelly. What do you think about crowd control, Kelly?
I think that's going to be necessary. I absolutely agree with you, Andrea. I think that, you know, these are new positions we're going to need to be creating, and that's what we're going to need to do.
Boy, we've got a flood of response for Bob's email there. Bob's the hero of the hour here. Let me just read. Elisa says, I agree with Bob regarding Park Avenue. The seating seemed fine. That didn't seem to be the problem. This week, what I saw was the waiting area was a big group of people in the middle of the sidewalk, all crowded together, and no one was masked. My husband and I were on a walk. We needed to walk on the street in order to get through and not walk in the middle of an unmasked crowd. End quote. That, Kelly Bush, that's what's not supposed to be happening, right? I mean, when you sit down to eat, you can obviously not wear a mask, but you're supposed to be masked up until that point, I think. Is that right, Kelly?
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, we can't really control what happens outside of our space. Well, for us and a lot of restaurants that I know of are saying, you know, call ahead and we'll let you know when it's time to come in. I think waiting areas aren't good in general, and I think that's even part of the guidelines, maybe in the best practice side and not mandatory, but yeah. People shouldn't be standing around and waiting. If they are, they should have masks on.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound preachy here, but you can't be pro-opening and anti-mask. You can't. Pro-mask.
That's
your license. Pro-mask is pro-opening. I wear a mask because I'm super pro-opening. I'm a big fan of businesses getting back on their feet and supporting them and moving out and going out as much as possible within reason. But that means being smart about it. And if you're waiting for a table, you got to do that, especially if you're sort of in a blob of people and there's not a whole lot of infrastructure to deal with this yet. I know we're all trying to be creative and do our best with this, but yikes. And David in Rochester says he wants to thank Bob for his comments about Park Avenue. He agrees that it's disgusting. He also wants to know what will happen to the bike lanes if they close streets. He says this should not be a tale of two cities. What do you think, Roger Brown?
Well, here's, you know, this whole thing began when it was realized that there wasn't really enough room out there for the pedestrian to walk on our streets. And so the idea of closing down streets, yes, or the idea of making more room by narrowing or the street for the automobile or widening the pedestrian way itself sort of started this whole thing, and also increasing the connectivity for walkers and for bikers and for trying to take the car, reduce the level of use by the automobile in these areas, increase the connectivity and space for the pedestrian to walk and for the biker to bike. And obviously at the end of the day, it really did provide potentially more room for restaurant and people wanting to eat outside. So initially this idea, and that's where the Vernouf sort of came from, this European concept of taking these walkways, streetways, and turning them into complete multi-use, multimodal kinds of spaces, and increasing the connectivity, the walkability, and so forth, all of this. So eventually we may be working in that direction, but we should keep that in mind, as far as keeping streets open for a lot of different uses.
Absolutely. Evan, can I chime in there for a second?
Sure.
So I just want to comment on two things. One, obviously, I want to comment on Bob's comment. You know, it's a little bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing. The idea of trying to open up restaurants quickly was not so that people can – it wasn't driven by the idea of people being able to leisurely go out and eat and have a good time. It was driven, like my colleague Mary said, because – small businesses are, in fact, the backbone of the economy, and we wanted to do everything that we could to get people back to work. The hard part about this, where the rubber hits the road, is always enforcement, and it always will be enforcement. And we don't have all the tools by ourselves as a city to do the enforcement on this. In some ways, it's the fire marshal. In some ways, it's Dr. Mendoza's health department who has the sanitation crew who does restaurant health inspections. It's also the state liquor authority. And collectively, we all need to be making sure that we are doing enforcement the best way, because if there are, in fact, businesses who are thumbing their nose at these guidelines, then they need to be penalized, no doubt about it. If there's businesses who just don't understand what's going on or haven't thought through Andrea's or Kelly's good suggestions, then we need to find the way to train them. But all that stuff needs to happen, and what I would ask anyone listening is, if you see a restaurant that seems to be really intentionally or not, but just not following the guidelines, to please call 311. That is probably the best mechanism right now for people to be able to report this stuff. That will go directly to the city's fire marshal and neighborhood business development. The other thing I wanted to add, I forget the gentleman who sent that last email in, but I can't let the hour go by without talking about transportation, because he's absolutely right. There is no excuse for closing streets being the end of bike lanes and pedestrians, which is why, as this stuff happens, we need to be able to put forward a plan like we've seen in other cities. And Reconnect Rochester has regularly highlighted Milwaukee's Open Streets Plan, which is a great comparable city. Milwaukee's done a great job on this. And I think what you're going to see in Rochester shortly, we're working on this, is to activate the bicycle boulevards. So that's something that, again, is also in the capital plan for the next year, is to build out the infrastructure of bicycle boulevards and to make sure that there are pathways for people to be able to get to and from where they got to go, not just the restaurants, but even bike commuters in our city, so that we can open up safely, not just for drivers, not just for diners, but also for people who walk and bike as commuters.
Mary Lupin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I don't think that this would shut down bike lanes. You know, pedestrians and bikes, they fit in the same space. You know, we're all thinking in terms of the transportation world of multimodal. We want people to be able to get from A to B in a safe way, and I think open streets only enhances that. You know, currently many of our bike lanes in our biking infrastructure are sharrows or bike lanes, and they're not protected. And I know from personal experience, after riding in an actual protected bike lane, the stress I was carrying around being hit, I didn't even realize I was carrying. And so I think this could actually increase people using their bikes. So I think it's definitely, they go hand in hand.
All right, Bill in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, good afternoon. Question about if you're an employee of a restaurant and you go in and you notice that, let's say, the kitchen staff is not wearing masks or gloves, and you just don't feel like that's a very safe environment for you to be in, what should the employee do, and how does the employee protect themselves from being fired if they say something? What rights does the employee have at that point?
Kelly Bush, you know the answer to that?
I know calling 311, like Mitch said, but there is an anonymous, I'm trying to find the link to it. There is an anonymous way to report businesses also. So that might be something to think about also.
Yeah, Mitch, Mary, any help there?
I would just say that to me, that specific question really seems like something that's more in the purview of the health department than calling 311. I think that's something, I mean, certainly 311, you know, is intended to be a catch-all for things like this, but that seems like something that the health department needs to be able to check in on directly. And I don't have it in front of me, but I'm certain that there's a regular number for folks to call for the health department to be able to do their inspections if people see issues. So that's something that I can look up for folks too.
And if the employee decides at that moment that they want to leave the premises for their own health, are they protected at all?
I don't have the legal answer to that, but it's certainly something that I think we should be able to get you an answer for that.
Okay.
Bill, I don't either, but I would think, I mean, if you're protected, you can't, I'm trying to even think of it, like if you were to call the Department of Labor, that you can't be retaliated against.
Bill, I hope that helps. And so as we've had a really sort of robust discussion in this hour, marking 1 week since that, as Kelly mentioned, that quick call, the opportunity to open outdoor seating at restaurants came a week earlier than expected. They got online fast. A lot of restaurants opened up. It's been about a week. Kelly, what do you think restaurants need most from government right now?
Support, continued support, obviously. And I think the government's been great, honestly, to get us the opportunity to utilize space that we currently don't have for outdoor seating is going to be huge. We know people are going to be much more comfortable in eating outdoors for a while, and being able to utilize space that we previously hadn't is just fantastic. What Mitch has been able to do is really wonderful.
Okay. Mary Lupien, what do you want to see council, Rochester government do? You know, what are your hopes for making this continued transition to pandemic dining work?
Well, you know, I think we have a process for which communities can apply, but I also think that we need to be, you know, taking the lead in some of the areas. If there isn't a strong necessarily business association maybe that doesn't have the means to get everything together that's needed, but to go through with kind of a common sense approach of which areas make sense. I think we need to be thinking about more than just dining and where are other spaces that we can activate. Like Parcel 5, for example, you know, Andrea mentioned Sean Dunwoody had done an art installation there to kind of visualize some of the things we've seen in other cities where they've spray painted circles on grass areas, you know, in parks in the middle of their cities. We didn't have grass, so he made these little circle astroturfs. This is protect your circle. It's kind of a cute idea. But, you know, even in the recent Black Lives Matter protests, you know, the last Saturday they ended up at Parcel 5 and they said, why isn't this a park? And they actually called to have it be called Black Lives Matter Park. And I think that, you know, there's some intersectionality here of where we can create open space for people to enjoy and also be thinking about, you know, the areas where we need more space in terms of equity.
Okay, Mitch Gruber, about 45 seconds. What do you think?
I just think this is an excellent opportunity for us to be innovative and thoughtful and flexible, and I'm shockingly proud of how we've done, not just as a city but also county and a state. Credit to everyone who's worked on that, And I want to see the restaurants thrive. I mean, you know, Evan, I've been on your show to talk about my other job where we try to, at FoodLink, where we try to build talent for the restaurant industry. I'm a firm believer that the food industry is the most important part of our economy. It's going to continue to grow. We need to be thoughtful and mindful about how to make it prosper right now in a time where not much is prospering. And it's really the collaboration that's going to do that. So I'm hopeful that we can keep making it happen over and over again with folks like Kelly.
And Roger Brown, about 30 seconds as a creative consultant for CDC Rochester.
Well, you know, there have been some really good initiatives brought forth over the last several years pertaining to complete streets and turning the streets themselves away from sole use by the vehicle and adding much more space for the pedestrian. And if we can continue doing that, we'll be in great shape.
It will be very interesting to see if we do and what the dining scene looks like. I want to thank our guest. Roger, thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you.
Kelly Bush, president of the New York State Restaurant Association's Rochester chapter. Good luck to you and your colleagues through all of this. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Mary Lupi and Mitch Gruber from Rochester City Council. Thanks to both of you.
You got it.
Take care.
All right, and our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. I'll see you tonight at 8 p.m. for a debate on WXXI-TV and a race for the New York State Assembly. And if not there, we'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.